thanks once again for downloading and listening to a podcast from Celtic Underground. We are in the 21st year and the 20th season of the world's longest running football fans podcast. You can subscribe by going to theCelticUnderground.substack.com and you will get correspondence, articles, emails straight to your inbox. You can pay a little bit of money and you will get exclusive content straight to your inbox. And if you go online and look on our website, you can still, you don't need to be on the Substack app, you can get all the podcasts on your usual provider. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, saying enjoy the latest podcast.
Misery loves company. That's what the wise man said. The remedy.
Okay, I am joined now by Matthew of Hill History and Keith McGinty. It is the middle of summer, so how are you guys coping with the fact that Scotland finally... They keep talking about Britain having a heat wave. England had a heat wave, and Scotland for the last 2.5 weeks has had a summer. It's not a particular, it's nice and pleasant, but it's not a heat wave. So how are you coping with Scotland actually finally getting a summer? You enjoying it?
That's been great. It's funny, bizarrely, it's slightly cooler. We were on holiday. We always go on holiday right at the start of the school holidays, and at 1.41 where we were when we'd been abroad. So bizarrely, in some ways, it's been cooler coming back, but actually, in general terms, I think this is there's a British thing, certainly a Scottish thing of moaning about the weather, whatever the weather happens to be. And I think it's appropriate that we normally spend summer moaning that there hasn't been one, and now it's really important that we spend this year moaning that there's been far too much of a summer, and you know, hoping to go back to some sort of equilibrium that never ever happens.
As I always say, we've got the blandest weather on the planet. It never gets far too cold, it never gets far too hot, it never gets too dry, and it never gets too wet. Well, it does get a bit wet, but yeah, pretty bland.
I was saying that to the taxi drivers in Tenerife. I can only speak a little bit of Spanish whenever I'm over there, and I love to do it. And we're talking about the comparing the weather from Scotland to Tenerife, how it's just lovely like that all the time, just nice between 20 and 30 degrees Celsius. And when I said Scotland, we get that for 1 or 2 days. I'm turning into a bit of a liar now. We've had this for a couple of weeks now. It's been nice. It's not been too hot. It's been getting a wee bit muggy, but it's nice. It's comfortable. Scotland was like this each summer, then it'd be a perfect place to live.
It would be not bad. Anyway, talking of summer, we're on obviously to talk about the plethora of players that Celtic have signed this summer. Let's go through them all. There's Duran. And that's it. So Keith, what do you think of our inaction in the transfer window so far?
Really, it's like Schrodinger's transfer window already this season, isn't it? It can either be a fantastic transfer window with the names that are linked with us just now and who are potentially coming in as early as what next week is what we're hearing, or it's going to be utterly shit yet again, which... If you go by the past couple of seasons where we keep getting linked with these players and then it just tends to fall through until we see them at the side of the pitch with the green white scarf held aloft, then I'm erring on the side of caution just now. I am very much hopeful that the names that have been linked with us, and we'll maybe go into them a wee bit of detail, they will come in, but we need them in earlier than now. And then the team really needs that boost, that bolster to get these names through the door.
Matthew, your thoughts on the inaction so far?
A bit similar to what Keith says. I mean, although I have the slight difference, I think you only truly know that we've signed someone when Paul the Tim gets a selfie, you know, with them. I think that's the real confirmation that things have gone well. I think the problem is it feels... I think it's quite interesting to imagine how Celtic look to the outside world. And when I say the outside world, I mainly mean in the context of Scottish football. But I suppose you could widen it, because it does feel Groundhog Day-esque or Groundhog Season-esque, in the sense that every summer in recent years it feels that we say, right, surely this time, you know, it's going to be different. I think going back to, you know, the return of Rodgers first time, I spent when Rodgers came back for the second time, I thought, right, if you've considered what really defined Brendan Rodgers' first spell, it was the signing of Scott Sinclair. You know, it was just It was a genuine name, a really, really big signing. And he was absolutely brilliant. I mean, there's no question, you know, Scott Sinclair really just was the perfect symbol of Rodgers' sort of first season. So when Rodgers came back for the second spell, I spent the next few weeks going, we're going to be getting at least two Sinclairs. That must be why he's agreed to come back. We're getting, hopefully not actually Scott Sinclair, the original one, you know, hopefully new. But we're not just going to get one signing at that level, we're going to get two. And it kept going on and it kept going on, and then it just didn't happen. And then you thought, well, he's just in the door, maybe in January. Then it didn't happen. Then you got to the summer, the following summer, and it really didn't happen. And it does feel every summer in recent years that we have sort of sat here going, oh, we're not, you know, when are we going to actually do something? When are we going to make a big statement? Now, I think the weird thing is to say, if you look from the outside, I suppose if you're not a Celtic supporter, most people probably can go, what are you moaning at? Look, last season, I think if you're, take away, right, I've never actually got a problem, take away the sectarian aspect. I think sometimes we complain that everybody hates us type thing. And actually, I always think that's logical. You can't be the biggest team. You can't be the team that wins everything and be popular. You know, if you go and watch Grüffer-Furth, if you go and watch, you know, like a lower German team, they're not celebrating that Bayern Munich are really good. If you go to Italy, fans of, again, Lecce or something like that aren't really pleased to see Juventus winning yet another consecutive title. And the same goes for anybody else. You know, nobody in Spain out with Barcelona and Real Madrid celebrates Barcelona and Real Madrid. And I think if you're going to be at the top of the tree, you have to accept that, and not for, I appreciate for some people it is sectarian, but in the main it's mostly they've got the most fans, they've got the most money, and they've got the most success. So I think it's quite weird because people for the last few years keep listening to us going, things are terrible, this is absolutely terrible, and especially last season. And then you end up with a double. And I think in some ways, is there the bubble finally going to burst? Maybe this will be the summer where we moan and it's bad and then you win nothing next year and everyone can finally go, told you so. Equally, as Keith says, and I think the Schrodinger example is a really good one, there's clearly, I think you can always tell the difference between rumour of just my granny's dog once met a guy who sees Celtic and he says you're going to be signing this, that or the next thing. I think you can tell the difference often between that and when both newspapers, mainstream, but also online, start talking quite seriously about candidates. Obviously, Duran has come in. It's hard to tell how, you know, he's had a reasonably positive start, albeit, you know, not in any, you know, serious notion yet. I think, as Keith says, if some of the names we're getting linked with all come in, you know, if we end up with five or six signings, some of which at really big levels, then it's great. You know, I think people will... I don't think it'll take away the mistrust of the board, but I think it will ease it to some extent. Equally, we might well be, you know, when the, you know, as newspapers are fond of saying, you know, when the window slams shut, you know, the transfer window never just closes. It never just reaches the point where it's happened. It always slams shut. When that happens, I suppose that's the only time we'll know. And I think the older I get, I've always been a bit like this, but the older I get, I don't really pay much attention to, or I try to avoid it. Because, again, as I say, whether it's trackside with a scarf, whether it's a Paul the Tim selfie, until that happens, that's the only time I actually take a real interest in it.
One thing that Matthew said there, Keith. Now, I do sometimes find in the current world of black and white, you know, you're either everything the board do is shit, or if you don't agree that everything the board does is shit, you're a happy clapper who's happy with the board. And as we all know, the world is... various shades of grey. So I'm not saying this is the only reason, but I do wonder if one of the compounding issues of the frustration of the support in the more recent times is actually a point Matthew touched on there. See, when we got Brendan back, everybody knew that Brendan left last time because of a perception that the club were not supportive of his plans to take us further in Europe. And so I think the natural assumption when Brendan came back was, well, the only reason Brendan's coming back is because that issue's been resolved and we're going to give it a go in European football. So, as I say, I'm not saying that consequently the windows, if it wasn't for that, then the windows were brilliant. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, do you think in the more recent past, one of the compounding issues is expectations were then raised on the arrival of Brendan that we were going to get out of this cycle of signing players just to finish above here above Rangers? I think you might be on mute.
Yes, that also came from Brendan Rodgers himself in quotes that attributed to him. He came back with Michael and Peter shaking the double handshake like old Lang Syne, but he also bigged up what he was going to do with the club. We have been waiting for a long time for this club to make a meaningful impact in Europe, and that seemed to be what he was brought back in to do, to make that promise. Our transfer strategy and how we went about it, we had one season where it looked as if he was building on from what Ange had done. But I think when Brendan Rodgers was here the first time, we couldn't just get over the mental block of our players playing the way that we play in Scotland and Europe. It was as if we thought, right, these teams that we're playing against are just too good for that. We can't do that. Ange seemed to get our team past that. We had games where we played incredible football and we had big results. I remember that goal that was the 3:30 kickoff at Celtic Park where Jota played the ball through to Kyogo and he scored an absolute screamer. World-class goal, you would say. It was then we started to get over that little hurdle mentally where we can compete by playing our style of football. And it felt when Brendan Rodgers came back in, he was able to deliver the type of football that he foresaw our team playing in Europe with our players, but we didn't build on that. We didn't regenerate the rest of the team and keep building on in different positions at right back. I know he wanted what 11 million for the Belgian right back, and we weren't able to see that through. Things like that, had we pushed the boat out those little bits, I felt that we would have kept everybody happy. We would have kept Rodgers happy. The team would have kept improving, but we would. I know you've mentioned this loads of times, Brian. Our dominance in Scottish football would come from doing really, really well and playing in Europe. We wouldn't have had to worry about going to the very last minutes of the games against Hearts at Celtic Park in the last day of the season, because we would have been so far ahead with the quality of players that we'd been bringing in and recycling. We'd be selling them after two seasons for bigger money, but then reinvesting that in the squad. It felt when Brendan Rodgers came in as if that was what we'd been hoping for the club to be, this modern football team that did become too attached to players. We'd all felt it with Jota whenever he was here. We saw what would happen when players do really well with Celtic. Celtic seemed to have went in a totally different direction, that anybody that leaves us, we're desperate to get them back and just do it all over again. It's really...
Yeah, there might be one in the next week.
Yes.
Which we'll go on to the players in a minute.
Yeah, the Greek boy. Yeah, I like the look of him.
Yeah. So, again, on that principle, Matthew, of we've got loads of time left in the window. You know, there's someone I know who's quite supportive of the board, who continually says, you know, what are we doing? What are fans doing sending out statements in the middle of July? The window's got half of July, the whole of August, and two or three days in September to go. What are we doing peeing our pants and getting so agitated about? And my point back to that is, because of, that's fine. You know, I can sit here and look at this window in isolation and say, he's right. You know, we've got all this time left in the window. There was a rush of activity of Rangers and Hearts bringing in players, but actually they were all cheap and freebies. And now that we've got into the bit where people seem to be spending reasonable sums of money, that's all dried up with them. So we're just in the same boat. There's a part of my brain that says that. There's a part of my brain that says, yeah, you know, we were the best team in Scotland. So as long as, and we've got players coming back from the World Cup. So as long as we get players in by the end of the window, it's a long season. That's all that matters. So there's a part of my brain that says that. And then the other part that goes back to this guy supporting the board is to say, yes, but last window we needed a striker. And we didn't have anybody. We farted about on a 29-year-old Dahlberg. One day left in the window. He agrees on a Saturday night to join Celtic. And then on a Sunday morning, his agent emails and says, my client's changed his mind because his wife doesn't want to come to Glasgow. That was on the back of the January window when we'd needed strikers. That was on the back of the previous summer window when we'd farted around at the last minute and do things like sign Trusty. When we need a centre-back, we sign Trusty with one day to go. So the counter to that is the recent track record of us is Yeah, I know we've got loads of time, but we still don't deliver when we've got loads of time, or the delivering we do in the loads of time is chasing around, like going into the shops on Christmas Eve and just buying whatever's left on the shelf. So Matthew, what part of my brain's right? Just let it go. We've got 6 weeks to go. Or the track record is that they won't deliver even in the last 6 weeks. Which part of my brain's right?
Well, we'll know in 6 weeks. I mean, fundamentally. But I mean, I think the point is that is the reality. We could be outraged just now. Sack the board. I mean, that's obviously, it's not a new idea, you know, in recent times or anything like that. And, you know, 6 weeks from now, you could be sitting going, God, that is a really good squad. A fair play. They've gone out, they've pushed the boat out. We really have gone and signed some big players, and we've really improved the squad. Yes, we lost a lot of players over the summer, but to be honest, a lot of them we needed to lose. It wasn't, you know, some devastating thing. That might happen, but it might not. And I think your point about, you're right, if you look at it in total, if you just looked at this window in complete isolation, if you just said, look at Celtic's record domestically in terms of success, and this is what's happened so far, probably people would go, well, actually, what are you complaining about? There's loads and loads of time. If you want to complain, wait for 6 weeks and see if you've actually got a reason to complain. I think your point is that to some extent we're looking at experience. I mean, I think this comes down to the general divide between the board and supporters. I'm of the view, I think there's various things. You alluded to, was there a disappointment about, you know, Brendan Rodgers coming back? You know, people thought this was going to be it. And then when it wasn't, that sort of set in motion a psychological disappointment that in some ways we've never got over. I think there is an element of that. This is a bugbear of mine. It's just a bit of a hobby horse of mine. And I will have mentioned it before, but I still think, whether we psychologically realise it or not, I think COVID hangs over a lot of problems the club faces. And I think that because it's a bit like, you know, Freud speaks about the idea where both, you know, Sigmund Freud speaks about the context where both sex and death are always on our mind, whether we realise it or not, and they shape our lives in a ways that we don't ever directly realise, but they do. And I do think there's an aspect where, certainly as a trigger, COVID was a disappointing thing. Supporters, this is true of all clubs, incidentally, but from a Celtic perspective, supporters gave their money to the club, knowing, let's be honest, that we weren't going to go in hundreds of pounds to sit on a computer and watch what really were glorified training sessions. They were, and that's not, but you know, that's not sour grapes because we lost. To be honest, if we'd won a treble that season, I wouldn't have taken any great joy out of it, for the incredible simple reason that watching empty stadiums, you know, never was Jock Stein's adage, you know, of, you know, football's nothing without fans, more proven than in the COVID season. And I think there's, psychologically, fans almost felt, we gave you our money, many of us, including me, let you keep the money from the year before, although I'm actually told by people at Celtic that that wasn't what the majority of supporters did. So a part of me slightly regrets giving the money in the bank that I didn't take the rebate. But we did all that. And then I think you had a terrible season. We then have the sort of the inconsistency. Ange turned out to be brilliant, but the process of getting there wasn't, you know, the process. And I think coming out of COVID, fans instantly went, we've given you all this money, you've had a terrible season, you've now messed up the management situation. And from there, I think that is, for a lot of people, the seed of, we don't trust you, we don't really think you're good enough. You add in then the Brendan Rodgers thing of him coming back, this is when it's going to be different. Oh no, it's not. Allied to Celtic's other problem is, and there's often, I think for fans, again, people that don't support Celtic will often say, oh, it must be boring winning. And absolutely, you know, not talking about boring. You know, the end of the season, you know, the last game, the Scottish Cup was brilliant and all the rest of it. But it doesn't matter whether you're excited by something or not. People are inclined, all human beings want new things. One of the reasons that we are a very consumerist society, one of the reasons that, you know, a lot of shops, especially if you look touristy shops, make money, is by the quick dopamine hit of, here is a bit of cheap tat that's new that you can go, oh, look, I've bought this new thing. And then tomorrow you can be bored of it and you can do, I want a new thing and I want a new thing. And I think the reality is, dominating in Scotland is great. Of course it is, because that, at its heart, is what Celtic's primary goal ultimately is. But you need to intersperse it with something else. You need to have... No one's saying, look, we're not going to win the Champions League. Of course we're not. Could we win a European trophy? Maybe. Are we capable of reaching the last 16 of the Champions League? Maybe. You know, it's not going to be an annual thing. But, yeah, there's no reason... If Bodo Glimt and so on, you know, can do so well, there's no reason that we can't on occasion. And I think if you did that, if you had the odd difference, then fans in general are more willing to accept other things that are perhaps more, for want of a better phrase, formulaic. And the reason behind what lies behind all this is there's a multiplicity of reasons why at times fans aren't happy with the board. That often just then perpetuates itself. Once you've established the principle that the board are incompetent, whether or not that's completely fair or not, but once you've established that principle, it becomes self-perpetuating. The board are incompetent because we know the board are incompetent because the board are incompetent. And the reason we know they're incompetent is because they're incompetent, because they've shown in the past to be incompetent. And it sometimes that's true. Sometimes it's probably a little bit unfair. And I think from a transfer perspective, that is exactly the situation that we're in, where fans have sort of felt for a wee, you know, for the last couple of seasons, we've not really invested anything. There's been this march to the top of the hill, then march back down again of disappointment. And so inevitably, we sit just now. And even though your friend is ultimately right, you've won the double, you've got weeks to go in the transfer window, but you're not looking with confidence based on recent times and going, ah, but this board has repeatedly shown that even when you doubt them, they can pull through. On occasions, they have done. But on occasions they haven't. And if the general psychology is that they haven't done, rightly or wrongly, on a consistent basis, then inevitably people are going to sit and worry and go, this is going to be another year of disappointment from a transfer perspective, perhaps not like in terms of a competitive sense.
I think Keith, Matthew touched on a good point there. I always felt one of the problems for Celtic in COVID was, understandably, I mean, like you, Matthew, I put my money in and I put it in on the basis of we've no idea how long this is going to last and I want to make sure my club's there at the end of this. I gave them a gift to watch it on the telly, as you quite rightly say. And like you, I didn't take my money back from the season before. But also, Peter did something which, again, it's understandable why he did it. He's desperately grasping for reasons why people should pay lots of money to watch it on the telly. And he says, see if you back, and he understands the thought process that, you know, we had about, we just want to make sure our club's at the end. And Peter says, right, see if you back us, we'll give you really special stuff as a thank you afterwards. It'll be, you know, we'll give you stuff. But because he didn't know how long it was going to be, he didn't know how much cash is going to be eaten into of our cash reserves, he can't say what those great rewards are going to be at the end of the process. And so getting back to Matthew, I think you're spot on, Matthew, because I think part of the issue was that trust bond was slightly broken there. Because when we then came and said, right, okay, what's a brilliant surprise? I'll give you a piece of paper and it says you're pure magic during that time. And I'll also give you a tuppence halfpenny voucher for the Celtic shop, knowing that it's not quite enough to buy anything of consequence, but you can use it towards buying a strip, which is more money. And actually it works out at about the value of our profit margin on the strip. So hey-ho. So I do think there was an element of that's where the trust was broken. So I think Matthew's got a point. I think the other point that Matthew touched on, I think gets back to this concept, you know, Matthew talking about we want new things. It might seem ungrateful to win 14 out of 15 titles and then say, that's all right. But that's human nature. I went to the cinema last night. It wasn't anything like a cinema that I would have gone to 15 years ago. Because the people who make cinemas understand, a consumer won't put up with what they were prepared to put up with 15 years ago. You have to enhance their experience all the time. And so for me, what the Celtic fans are looking for is, they're looking for a showbiz vision of, here's the future, this is what we're heading in, this is the direction. Whereas I think, especially since COVID, we have been on the hamster wheel of, Yeah. What's the future for Celtic? The same as it was yesterday, which is the same as it was the day before, which is winning stuff in Scotland and, you know, we'll do our best. So do you think that also contributes to it? There's no vision. There's no, here's our master plan.
Yeah, there is still a mistrust. I think it goes both ways between the board and the fans from COVID. They were annoyed that we were asking for money back, and I wish I was in the situation where I could have just donated the money to the club, but I did actually have to ask for some of the money back, just wasn't in the position to do so. And I know there was many other people who were in the same position, but we all pay our money into Celtic in different ways, and it might be from buying replica kits through the club, from going to various nights that are held at Celtic Park. So we do all contribute to Celtic in various different ways. The special stuff that Peter's talking about, and it's the same every season, it's the moments and the memories that are made from going to or from following and watching Celtic. It's those moments where you remember, if you're at the stadium, what it was like that day, how the sun was, how it was that free kick that was taken that Callum McGregor played through to Callum Osmond, and he ran the full length of the pitch with nobody in the Hearts side to score that goal to seal the league for us. That's a special moment that's going to live on with me and Maldus for the rest of our lives. That's what following Celtic's about. That's what we're going to get year after year. We're going to be getting those special moments. Those special moments come from investing in our team, investing in the infrastructure of the club as well. But we're not seeing that. Last season, especially when it came to the transfer dealings, you're talking about Kasper Dahlberg. I'd love to think that he was sitting down on the Saturday night and he had to mention to his wife where he'd get an offer to go to, and he thought, I'll put on a good Glaswegian programme, and he sticks on Taggart or something, and she's absolutely horrified, and there's no way that they're going to Glasgow after that. We've got to have backups. We've got to have two or three other options ready to go straight away, and we can't be leaving it to the very last minute for a position that is so important to this team, that is so important to the history of Celtic Football Club. Our talisman, the goal scorers, the ones that the kids are going to get in the back of their tops, that shirts are going to be framed because of just the special moments that they provide us with. When we talk about winning 14 out of the last 15 seasons, my oldest has started playing Football Manager, and he keeps telling me about all these African Cup of Nations that he's won and Champions Leagues that he's won. And I'm like, oh, all right, what are you playing it on? Are you playing it in easy mode? Try going up a level. And it feels as if we're playing football just now in easy mode. We are too afraid to try it at the next level up and try and make that wee dent in European football. When we did try it, it's as if we got a fright. We saw that the wages were getting too big. Again, that's bad management of the squad and how that goes. But we've got to expect that the wages are going to go up if we're going to be competing higher up in Europe. I think one of the problems for us, though, is when we look at comparable teams in Europe, the clubs like Ajax, they seem to go through cycles where they do really, really well, and then they've got a couple of years building that up again, which, to be honest, wouldn't be acceptable at Celtic. We would have to still dominate at home, but hopefully then make an impact in Europe. I feel we're just trying to do it too easily just now. 14 out of 15 league titles is absolutely amazing. The memories, the special moments that have come from that are incredible. But I still remember the European nights, probably above many of the domestic ones. Whenever it comes to big wins, big special moments, they're the ones that live with me, because it feels as if we've outperformed ourselves. We've done more than what is expected of us. That game against Barcelona, unsurpassable for me. Just the feeling that I had coming out of that stadium. So much so that I went straight in to buy the white, the 125 kit.
Mm-hmm.
That's what those special moments give you. A desire to actually spend more to get the shiny new thing that Matt was talking about there. So the mistrust that comes from the board to the fans, yes, that's there. There's mistrust between the fans and the board. That's because of what we've been looking at the past couple of seasons, and looking at the transfers in and out over the last two, three seasons. There's not a lot there for us to get truly excited for. and it doesn't feel that the money that we're putting in is being reinvested in the team and the infrastructure around it. And no doubt that they've got a hard job at Celtic Park, but we don't see that they are doing enough to warrant the massive salaries that they're getting. It feels as if we're underperforming in far too many areas.
So one of the other things, Matthew, that you touched on there, the breaking of trust and some of the sort of anger and the support. So was it the day of the Middlesbrough game? Anyway, in the last week, somebody who would know said to me, we are actively engaged in speaking with five players who, and I expect them all to come in the next week to 10 days. And those five players have not been talked about in the press yet. So all this stuff in the press is not real. And these are these active ones. And we'll get them over the line. Pretty confident we'll get them over the line. Right? And I think the next day, the Sun ran with Hoch from Bodø/Glimt. And then I think also Bowers then come in. So I'm assuming that those two, because they weren't being talked about, although they had previously been talked about, they weren't being talked about at the time. So I'm assuming that's two of the five players. Pretty looks like Greg Taylor's coming back as a backup left back. So that might be three of the five players that we're talking about. But in terms of the breakdown, the trust and the anger, the support, actually, part of the thing that, you know, we started 20-odd years ago, you know, Eddie started the Twitter feed Celtic Rumours. It was around the fact that if we heard stuff like that, we would post it up. We've heard this. And I actually thought it was a sad position that we're in. I thought to myself, I'm not sticking that on Twitter. Even though the person who's told me is really reliable, I'm not sticking that on Twitter because I can't be bothered. And all I would be doing is passing on. Somebody that I think is pretty reliable has just told me this. I couldn't be bothered being called a happy clapper, supporting the board, and all that bullshit when all I was doing was, I've just heard that we might be under it, that there's five players that we're speaking to just now. I'm pretty confident we'll get all five in. How do you think that is going to be that? Because that's a breakdown of trust. That's people wanting to believe the worst of the Celtic board all the time. How do you think that's going to be mended?
It's not in the short term. It quite simply isn't. I think, again, sometimes some of the criticism that Celtic get can be unfair. Some of it is just everything's terrible. Everything's terrible. And thus everything's terrible, regardless of what it is. But often it's valid. I mean, I think if you look at the issue, Brian Wilson has sort of, you know, spoke about the concept, you know, the issue of communication. I do think at its heart, that's been one of the club's failings. I think that's been one of the big problems that we've faced, that at times we don't communicate well. There are positive elements. And I don't mean fundamentally, the main thing fans are interested in is exciting players on the park. That's the reality. But I think at the periphery, if you look at, like, I appreciate it's a little bit different because there's a difference between applying for planning permission and getting it, and they might do more. But the club obviously recently, as part of the foundation, have applied to build a mugger, as it's known as. If you don't have children under a certain age, you might wonder what that phrase is. But multi-use games area or multi-use games arena, depending on what you want to say it. And the point is that this is something that I actually think is something that's really, really positive. Again, I'm not saying if we just build a couple of muggers, then we don't need a new striker. I don't mean that at all. But actually, the club having a genuine local connection with the East End, doing something that might actually create a community spirit, you know, connect Celtic to the area, I think is really, really positive. But we don't announce that. You know, you read about it because somebody has read that it's in, you know, Glasgow City Council obviously publish all applications for planning permission. And it just feels like that. And I actually think there are an awful lot of good news stories, but Celtic don't seem to want to tell them. Look, I'm not naive. I don't mean that if you did some of the stuff I'm away to see here, it would offset if we didn't make any signings. Obviously it wouldn't. But if you take a thing that I've been on, obviously I've spoken about before, and hopefully many people will know about. I was part of the group that held the first ever Celtic History Conference, and we held it at Celtic Park in June. It was a great day. We had hundreds of supporters come along. We had lots of other people on the waiting list. We just couldn't quite get them in because it was sold out. Literally hundreds came to Celtic Park. It was fan organised, but Celtic, fair play to them, they supported it. They didn't charge us anything. They gave us a lot of help and so on. Now, if you weren't one of the supporters who happened to read about it, you wouldn't know it happened. Mm-hmm. Was there anything on the club website? No. Was there somebody there from the club media team to film part of it to put on the internet? No. Was there any notion of reporting it to put it in the Celtic View or the match programme? No. It was just this anonymous thing that sort of happened. And I think there are lots of little things the club does that's positive, and we just keep it secret. Now, again, I go back to that in itself isn't going to fix the sort of the problems. But if you are going to fix the problems, reminding people that there are certain positive things that are happening is actually a good part of it. Also, though, giving people new things to hear about and read about and understand is actually, going back to what I said earlier about fans want something new, they don't just want the same thing over and over again. These things all matter, and the club doesn't do it. It feels like a bit like Secret Squirrel, you know, like, we're not going to tell you anything, we are going to keep everything secret. And again, based on then the breakdown of trust, well, you're not going to break it down, because if you never tell us positive things, fans are going to keep thinking everything's negative. So I think that's one aspect. I also think, if I'm being completely honest though, look, see, I mean, I made a sort of joke the other week that, you know, we kept getting told that, you know, one of the reasons we couldn't make transfer was because of the World Cup. And I was looking forward to like Rodri and Yamal and so on, you know, wearing green and white next season. Now that the final's done, you know, we can actually make a move on those players. I'll be completely honest with you. If we went out and signed the Spanish team in its entirety, it wouldn't mend the relationship. It genuinely wouldn't. Because for some people, for a sizable minority of fans, and probably a sizable majority of fans, they psychologically don't believe that certain people that are connected with the running or part ownership of the club have the club's best interests at heart. Now, whether that's right or wrong, I do actually think we've reached a point, I think, where you can't get past that, short of, and I don't think it's going to happen, but short of major sacrificial lambs. I'm not advocating for Nicholson or Chris Mackay to go, partly because I don't, you know, it's not so much I don't know who would replace them, but if they both went, and if the club did a sort of a mea culpa, we've got, you know, Brian Wilson, a mea culpa, you know, we've got it wrong, we're going to start doing this, we're going to start reminding you of positive things, oh, and by the way, we're going to sign these four players, that probably would offset it. But if you're not willing to do all of that, and I don't personally think the club will, then I don't think, if I'm being honest, we can ever, that for a lot of people, that the relationship can ever be fully mended. It's a little bit like, this is not an exact analogy, but if a couple are married and one of them cheats, you might well say, okay, right, okay, we'll get past it. But do you ever genuinely get past it? Or is there always an element of resentment and whatever else? I think that's where Celtic are. I don't think, short of a major, major sort of set of changes and departures, I think that for some people, maybe a minority, you know, if you look at, if we drew a 100% scale of fans, those 20% are probably reasonably content with the board as it stands. So they don't need one back. I think there's a minimum of 40% are irretrievably gone. I don't think there's anything that the current board and its with its current makeup can do. You've then got the other 40% where it could go different ways. But I suspect of that 40%, they would lean more towards the they're not good, they need to go, rather than the other way. And I say, I'm not actually joking. I think if we signed the entire Spanish team, I don't think it would fix the problem. And we're not going to do that. That's the honest reality. Equally, the only...
Are we not? I'm gutted.
Other thing, the only other thing that might fix it eventually, but I don't... But a bit like the affair analogy, I don't think we'd ever completely take it away, is time. In the sense that if we imagine that... Let's say we do go and sign five big-name players, you know, and actually players that we're excited with. And let's say, see, I'll joke aside, let's say you made a European final in the next 3 years. And in the lead up to that, you'd done really well. You know, let's say we had a good Champions League. Obviously, we're not going to be the final there, but you have a good Champions League this season and next season. The year after, you end up, I don't know, you reach even the semi-finals of the Europa or something. Something that was different and showed progress. People would, over time, would gradually forget. But again, that's not something you can just achieve. You know, the one thing you can't do is rush time.
I actually think, again, we had a heated debate about messaging and people were saying to me, well, it's nothing to do with messaging, it's signing players. And I get that, but I agree with you, Matthew. because I think we could sign all the players, all the best, all fantastic players for the rest of this summer. The latent issue is the clubs talk at the supporters. They don't engage with the supporters. That's that for me. You know, we send out a lot of stuff about Adidas stuff. I'm sure that's a contractual obligation that we've got with Adidas. And I'm sure the admins who post out go and sit there, oh God, I've got another advert to stick out today. But I'm sure they've got no, I'm sure there's no option. I am convinced we have no option but to send out, it'll be part of the contract, this volume of correspondence about stuff. Which all I think, not taking putting words in your mouth, I think basically what you'd be saying is, Matthew, yes, so see that volume that you're doing about Adidas stuff? Do the same volume from everything else.
I'll give you a quick analogy. So I go, as well as all the Celtic games, I go to all the Scotland games, and I'm a member of the Supporters Club, have been for years and years and years. We get regular emails from sort of every, I don't know, is it every week or whatever it is, there's regular emails coming from Scotland about this is whatever news we're announcing. Sometimes it's stuff of interest, this is the squad. Other times, just now, it's a bit, to be honest, it's a bit padding out of here's something. Now, I'll be honest with you, I don't read them just now. And you know what used to make me read them? They used to have a competition every single time. And it was always a reasonable price, something that occasionally something I would like, more often something that my kids who also come to the games would maybe like. And do you know what I would do? And it was always at the end. So I would scan through, I would read the sort of the main headings and all the rest of it, and then I'd go to the competition and I would enter the competition. But because I knew the competition was going to be there, we'd go there. Now they've dropped the competition. I don't read the emails. I don't. I've no interest. You know, there's nothing in it for me. You know, if I really want to know something, I can look it up. The major stuff has been covered in the news, and even things that, you know, like the squad announcement. Well, you know, by the time you send an email to the supporters saying, here is the squad, it's already been in all the news and all the rest of it. So I don't read it because there's nothing in it for me. Now, again, as you say, I completely agree with you, Brian. There's no question that A, the admin must put their head in their hands, but B, Celtic aren't doing it to wind up the fans. That's maybe just a byproduct. Some people would find, probably some people look up going, yeah, let's put another one out. Phoning up Adidas. let's just make something new today just so we can put another message out.
His birthday is it today?
Absolutely. But they're not. But imagine if Celtic put out a weekly email and actually had genuinely positive things, different things. You know, there's all sorts of stuff you could do. You could do a feature each week on different supporters clubs. You could do a special history bit. You could do something what actually was a vague, you know, was of genuine different interest, but was positive. We are doing positive things. And yes, you could put us part of that. And by the way, I know it's a 10 minutes since the last one, but here's a new top or anything like that. Again, people might engage with it a little bit more. Whereas it just feels, I think you used the analogy, Brian, quite rightly, you know, Celtic don't speak to supporters, they speak at supporters. And it does just feel, whether or not it's contractual or not, you feel like a cash cow. Celtic, you know, we're not going to tell you genuinely interesting things or useful things, but we are going to try and sell you something else, even though you're all really, really, really pissed off with, you know, with us in general. And there's just little things that you feel the club could quite easily do. But like I say, in themselves, they're not going to fix. They're not going to mend any relationships.
So, Keith, you anything to add to that?
Yeah, no, we're talking about how the club communicate. That's one of the big things that they're supposedly looking at this off-season with the new directors and things like that. But how the club use the media and how they mistrust the media and how they don't utilise fan media has always been a big thing for me. You talk about how the club talk at us and sometimes it's been proper shots fired. Ross Desmond, for example, has wee digs that he was getting at the fans last year. The reason that there's a mistrust there is because the fans don't feel like they have a voice. This is meant to be our football club that we all have a part and have a say in as well. And when it suits the club, we definitely do. This is all, we are one thing, we're all Celtic and all that. Until it gets a wee bit ropey for them, it gets a wee bit tricky, and then the barriers come up literally a couple of seasons ago. how the club use fan media and the relationship they have with the mainstream media. From what we're led to believe, there isn't a relationship with the mainstream media. There's no friends in those places there. And that's understandable. Some of the stuff that's been written about the club, you can understand why they would put their barriers up against them. Fan media as well. Fan media can be quite reactive and more to do with the gut feelings at the time. So you can understand that some of the things that are said maybe go a wee bit beyond the pale, a wee bit over the top. And I don't agree with much of what is said by fan media. I like to try and keep a level head and understand things a wee bit more and not just be reactionary, which sells really. And you can understand why people do that. But whenever it came to fan media, and we were one of the first ones to get in, I know the Celtic Underground's been doing it for a long time. Then through the Cynic, I had applied and we'd been getting into post-match press conferences, and then it snowballed into opening up to the wider fan media as well. Been doing that for the best part of a decade and absolutely loved it, but it was all one-sided. Celtic were always very, very guarded with us. They only ever spoke to us whenever they had a story that they wanted to get out, but they didn't want it coming from Celtic. There was no give, it was always the take whenever it came to Celtic. We would ask for things like interviews with like the directors of football or goalkeeping coaches and try to understand a wee bit what goes on behind the scenes. Celtic would never ever entertain anything like that and try to get interviews with the players one-to-ones to provide a wee bit of content and get a different angle for fans to listen to, because there seems to be just the weekly pre-match and post-match press conferences is all you would get one or two questions there. You don't really get a much, you don't get a chance to build a relationship with anyone and understand a bit of what goes on into getting the product that we see on the park. That's something that Celtic fans may be interested in hearing. So I always thought that there could have been a better way of building a relationship with fan media. And I can understand why Celtic were a bit reticent to that, to do that. But because there wasn't a relationship, when things start to go sour, then it turns pretty quickly and it becomes quite heated towards the club very, very quickly. And Celtic fan media might not hold a great sway, but it is very visual across all different types of media, YouTube, the X, Instagram, or everything that's available. There is a Celtic fan media outlet for people to listen to interact with. And the kind of doom spiral that comes from that, Celtic could have managed a wee bit more if they were that wee bit more open. I feel that was something that could come from it. Matt, the only other thing I was thinking, when you're talking about buying the full Spanish team, that there must be some portion of me that's a bit of an accountant, because all I was thinking about was financial fair play, how you've got to balance the books for that in a couple of years to come. And the only other thing you mentioned was talking to supporters clubs around the world. That's where fan media kind of leads the way. Some of the stories and the history, like yourself, that we shine a light on, that's where fan media kind of leads the way, and the club should look to maybe follow, adopt, or work with a wee bit more. When you're talking about the supporters clubs, Andrew's doing a fantastic series just now, More Than a Club. If you've not listened to it, definitely have a listen. The stories that come from that are absolutely brilliant.
And you're right. I've always thought, I mean, I've been to press conferences. Actually, great to go to the first couple because it's brilliant because you get behind the curtain. Then you realise behind the curtain, he's not the Wizard of Oz, and it's pretty boring. You realise that actually when you're sitting there and you're sitting 6 feet away from the manager every single week, you're not going to ask him a really pointed, unpleasant question. From a human level, we just don't do that as humans, because actually he's a bit of a hero and you're not going to ask him negative questions. So the novelty for me wore off. Other people liked going, that's fine. I'm not decrying, I'm just saying. However, I think you're right. I've always thought the perfect way to use the fan media is doing, you know, currency is king. I know Celtic's attitude is, see these fans, they've gone and monetized their websites. And they're taking cash out of Celtic. That's it. I'm pretty sure, nobody's articulated this to me, but I'm pretty sure that that's their attitude. They are using us to make money for themselves, these people, and so they can't be trusted. Well, maybe they are, but they're Celtic people, and it's better to have them pissing inside the tent than outside, currency, and if you are right, currency is king for these people. Content is king for these people. So give them content. Give them content. This would be my attitude if I was running it. Give them content that they are frightened to lose. And so therefore they are less likely. I know it's Machiavellian, but genuinely, give them content that does give them subscribers, that they would be frightened to lose that access. And that would make them less likely to have a pile on when things aren't going right. Counter to that is go and look at what happened at Rangers when Russell Martin was shit. They had press conferences that were up, that they would not, that they would ban the traditional media for the questions that they were asking Russell Martin. So there is a counter to that. But, you know, simple things like give fan media a guided tour behind the scenes at the new Barfield facility. You know, stuff that the traditional media would have no interest in because it's boring. Get fan media more engaged with what the foundation does, because some of the stuff the foundation does is really good, but from a traditional media perspective, it's boring and doesn't sell, so they're not interested in it. Get the fan media in, not at this time of season, but in October, November. Get the fan media in. I mean, obviously, he's been outed by Martin, but get the fan media in and speak to people who used to be on this bloody podcast and ask them what they do about recruitment. You know, I see stuff online. I mean, it frustrates me. I see stuff online from fan media making statements about what is or isn't happening. Celtic have got no recruitment department. Well, the minute a guy says this and he's stating from a factual perspective, my immediate reaction is, well, that guy knows nobody at Celtic because he's talking crap. Or when they say Celtic have gone and done this by giving it to their pets in the media, well, I know that Celtic have no pets in the media because they speak to nobody in the media. So I also know that guy's speaking crap. But if you had these people inside the tent and opened up and they met the recruitment team, they met the analytics team, they actually saw the two pieces of software that the analytics team use, and then they understood, you don't have to give them the full written detail of your whole commercial things activity in the background, but you can give them, what happens is our analysts use these two pieces of software to get down a list of players, and then from that goes across to the scouting department. Then the scouting department go out and this is, you know, sit down with the scouts and say, see when you watch a player. The scout doesn't have to give away his secret sauce of everything. See when you sit down with a player, roughly what is it you're doing that day? You know, I don't know, a scout might sit there and say, do you know what, we get so much information off Y Scout and whatever. It's not Y Scout, it's whatever the sites are that they use. I only really need to go and see a player for about, I could watch just the first half of a game. Or you know, or maybe he says, yeah, I need to go and watch that player three times in the flesh to verify, to see what he does off the ball, because we get the day. See if you get, I think, if the fan media had that type of access and that type, it's right up the street of the fan media for me. And it just lessens some of the negativity. Getting back to a point, big debate we had on WhatsApp, it will never get around the fact that if we sign nobody and the squad's crap, it will never overcome that. But what it will do is it will stop that thing that's now frustrating the hell out of me, is Celtic are interested in a player and you go online, here's why this guy will be shite for Celtic. I mean, it's gone to that bonker stage.
A lot of this is... No, I was just going to say that a lot of this is social media to some extent. I mean, the interesting thing, some of the things that have been spoken, I mean, the concept of monetizing things is not new. I mean, if you go back to the 1800s with football, I mean, football teams often argued with the press over access, because a lot of football teams took the view, and there's a chicken and egg element to it, but a lot of football teams took the view, pretty much what you've said, basically newspapers are making money off us. We're the ones that are putting a product on the pitch, and they are writing about it, and that is selling their products. And really, that's not fair, you know, because we should be making money. I mean, this is not a new argument in any way, the idea of money. The flip side, of course, was this. The reason that lots of people went to games, and the reason the game grew, was because they could read about it. You know, obviously, you don't in those days have radio, you don't have TV or anything like that. So your only way to find out about a game, unless you actually went to it, was to read about it. And in the long run, especially if you're trying to sell things, especially if there's contractual stuff with Adidas, etc., you do want a promotion. Yeah, it doesn't matter what the Celtic fan media is. Yes, they're making money. I mean, at the end of the day, I've not got personally a problem with that. I mean, I don't make any money at doing any of the stuff that I do, but I don't actually have a problem with people setting up a professional site and doing something that tells you about Celtic. If Celtic did genuinely resent that, if the feeling of we should be monetizing that, I think there's an element you can't entirely. One of the reasons that fans consume fan media rather than the official club media is people aren't deaf. There'll always be a division. Not the View and the fanzines and all the rest of it did well precisely because they weren't being published by the club. And the club, to some extent, will never be able to say certain things that fan media will. And I don't mean being outright extreme. It just, the reality is, the mainstream club isn't ever going to be able to do a certain thing. So having a fan media that promotes your product, for want of a better phrase, but in a commercial sense, isn't a bad thing. Because I go back to my analogy of, you know, like the Scotland situation. The simple and honest answer is, I'm not reading the SFA emails about whatever, because I don't care, because there's nothing in it that I engage with. But if you give me something I want to engage with, I might actually read the other stuff you're trying to get me to read as well. I think from Celtic's perspective, that's definitely true. I think the wider thing you said, Brian, about the Machiavellian aspect, the honest answer is, probably what Celtic haven't fully done, but have a slightly easier job to do. If you look at politics, if you look at political reporting, and let's go back to the turn of the century, okay? Because just now it is very different. I actually think one of the fundamental problems that political instability comes from is what I'm about to say. But in the past, this is exactly how it worked. In the days where you had television broadcasts at certain times every day, and you had the newspapers, radio was important, but that was always, you know, the political journalists on TV and political journalists in newspapers were the people that were primarily targeted by spin doctors or, you know, whatever else people want to talk about, you know, in the context of media management. And actually, your strategy was exactly that. What you want to do is give them enough where they want to keep coming back to you and don't want to annoy you too much because, well, you'll just cut them off. And, you know, they can write a bad story one day, but they then lose stories for the next 3 weeks. So actually, that's not a new thing. Media management, whether in sport, politics or anything else, has always to some extent been about that. And I think sport and politics are very similar because unlike most other types of media management, they are daily. If you run Tesco, you know you're not going to get a positive story every single day in the press. If you are a charity that's campaigning for something, you'll get occasional stories, but you're not going to get a daily story. But if you are Celtic or if you are the SNP or Labour or the Tories, you actually need something every single day. So in that regard, there's a similarity. I think that in the last decade and a half, one of the reasons we've had such political instability, you know, the latest prime minister getting in post this week, is increasingly it's harder for politicians and political parties to control a message, because it's not anymore the thing of, well, there's two major news cycles each day in terms of TV, and in addition there's, you know, there's the dailies, there's the Sundays that, you know, you can target and plan ahead, and there's quite a sort of an enclosed grouping. With the decline of the so-called mainstream media against the rise in social media and political sites, you know, and websites and all the rest of it, that's, I think, part of the reason that it's much, much harder for political parties to control a message just now, because there's just such a plethora and you can't control in the way of, well, we'll give you access today. Now, Celtic, to some extent, face a similar problem. We still have a mainstream media. For all people decry it and say it's dying, and it's certainly diminishing, it's still probably the main thing that dictates. You know, most of the time when people talk about something, it's based on this mainstream journalist has reported something rather than this website, you know, this fan media. I'm not saying that never happens, but the primary determinant is still, if it's sort of the mainstream media breaks something, Celtic fans and Celtic fan media will follow it. So whilst it's not entirely possible in the same way that politicians struggle to control the media, Celtic are much more narrow, and they also come from the basis that, in the main, whereas political journalists don't generally, they might have a personal bias, but they really just want stories every day, and actually negative ones are good. fan media doesn't necessarily want to write negative stories. It might just now because of all the situations that we've spoke about. But as you say, if we'd had a strategy, if we develop a strategy, mostly Celtic fans want positive news. You know, Celtic fan media does not actually every day want to go, things are rubbish, the club's terrible, we're not signing anything, you know, woe is me, and all the rest of it. In the main, people want to be... So Celtic are pushing it an open door because people want positivity. But you have to actually give them that. Some of the analogies you've said, that only works for so long. I mean, the reality is you can give a tour of Barrowfield. That's a good idea. Now, that only works for once. You can maybe do it next year. You know, you can maybe slightly tweak it later in the year with a different group of people. If it was Barrowfield, you could look at the women's team, you could look at the youth. There's ways you could do it, but it clearly isn't going to be a daily thing. But there is all sorts that I personally think Celtic could do that we don't. And whilst, again, without the signings, it's irrelevant, but we got to a lot of the negative situation we're in for the simple reason that there is this vacuum. And, you know, just as nature abhors a vacuum, so does newspapers, so does fan media. It'll get filled with something. You either feed the beast or the beast will eat you.
So we've covered off media, messaging, Keith. And I think what I'm going to say very quickly is that's the sort of end of the main podcast. And the next bit is going to be for people who are subscribers to the website. So I'll do that. I have, and the monetizing is basically to pay back 20 years of me spending a couple of grand a year hosting the anyway, so that's that.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.